Welcome to Cliff's Wujo. A dojo is a place in which the martial arts are practiced. A wujo is a place in which the wu-wu arts are practiced. The wu-wu arts are all things officially denied and everything unknown. Good morning. It's April 16th, 2012, 7:42 a.m. Pacific Coast of North America. This is another episode of Cliff's Wujo. The main reason that I'm doing this today, I've got all kinds of work I need to get at, is to get an idea out into universe. The idea is a very powerful one, needs to get to the appropriate people in order to be magnified, what they call in the military force magnification, that kind of thing. But the idea at its core is relatively straightforward and simple. And here's the... it's complex, though, or complicated. There's a lot of little parts to it. And the idea is that we've got a real disaster going with Fukushima. As an adjunct to that, it's not alone. There's going to be other nuclear disasters as a result of what we're heading into over these next few months. And the age of our nuclear industry, I won't call it that really, our nuclear infrastructure, and the stupidity of the people involved and the economics and so on. The economics is going to be a real problem because we won't be able to afford to pay for high-level maintenance on these very dangerous objects, a.k.a. the nuke plants. So here's the thinking. Fukushima is an ongoing disaster now that threatens to wipe out all the life on North Northern Hemisphere and maybe the whole planet if it goes supercritical yet again. So my thought has been for this whole past year that we need to root the technology out that is in the hands of Dr. Anderson and others, this time technology. And they have an interest in it, they have a legitimate ownership issues and so on, but it's now basically the end of humanity, and so patents and potential for profit are meaningless if we're all dead next year because Fukushima goes supercritical and starts this whole radioactive volcano thing that goes off and spews very short-term death all over the planet at the 800 millibar level of the jet stream. My thinking on this is that what we do is that we get the time, basically we'll call it time dilation technology. They're really closed time-like loops. Now, Dr. Anderson has been on coast to coast and has talked to a number of, not a great number, but a number of people about his technology and discussed it. And some people like Art Bell are of the opinion that Anderson's time technology allows you to time travel. It does not. He cannot put you in his device and ship you to 2014, nor can he ship you to 2010. It does not work that way. What he does have, if he's able to actually manufacture it as claimed, is something that can save all of our butts. And here's what he's got if he can produce it as claimed. First, let's start with an analogy. If we think of time as the water in a river, and let's just assume that we don't need to think about the boundaries of the river, where it came from, or any of that. We're just considering the flow of time and how we all sort of stand in the river and time pushes us along in a direction of its choosing, if you will. We don't have any real control as just native humans in our body being moved forward or backward. It just flows over us. So if we considered time that way, then what Dr. Anderson's and others, time dilation or shielding technology actually is the concept of being able to take a human and put them, if you will, in a boat or a bubble that insulates them from the effects of the water of the river getting on them. Now, note that the bubble they're in is not stationary. It's still flowing with the river. When they come out of their bubble, they're still in the same time as the rest of us. But during the period of time that they're during that period in which they are within that bubble, they are not affected by time corporeally the same way that we are. This technology has two aspects to it. It can either restrict the amount of time coming into the bubble, or it can magnify. It's basically a magnetic containment field, and you can tweak it to the direction of flow. So it's my understanding. Now, this is all logical. This all makes sense given the my understanding of how time works. It's, in fact, a logical extension of that and should exist. We should have a time control technology that exists at this level. The unfortunate thing for us is that people like Dr. Anderson and others are developing their technology within a framework that is less than complete in terms of their understanding of how universe is actually structured. So if, for instance, you're attempting to work in time and you think of humans and everything else as solid atoms, that's going to present a barrier to your development of your device. I'm not saying that Dr. Anderson views reality that way. I'm just saying that if you were under the impression that reality actually mirrors what you were told in high school or in any academic setting, then you will find that those understandings are a barrier to the development of interesting technologies because it is not an accurate portrayal of reality. So, getting back to the current situation, we have Fukushima going around and deciding whether or not it's going to go supercritical. Where there are attempts being made to do physical remediation, that is, to go on in and put physical matter on top of this energetic point of destruction. My approach is to not take that path. What I would have us do is to take an energetic approach to controlling the energy destructions that are going on. Basically, what I'm proposing is that we use the time restriction dilation technology, these closed time-like loops, and encapsulate the area of the Fukushima reactors within a very special form of these closed time-like loops that is based on an understanding I have, which I think is accurate. So far, I've done the math, and it is self-validating insofar as I'm able to continue, but I don't have a time generation facility here to check and see if, in fact, we could apply the math to the generation of the restrictive toroids that are actually used in the magnetic containment that keeps the time in or out. And what I'm suggesting that we do is that we take this advanced vortex math. If you want to go on YouTube, you can find a guy by the name, I think his name is Randy Powell. And he's got a very good course in advanced vortex math and a whole series of YouTubes, like 15, 18 of the things. In any event, though, Marco Rodin came up with the Rodin coil and some interesting laser work a few years back based on the vortex math. Nassim Harriman knows about it. But I don't think a lot of people have considered what we're actually playing with when the vortex math is brought into our thinking. Because bear in mind now, all things in the universe are toroids. Whether we see them as toroids or not is immaterial. They are, in fact, toroids. The Fukushima disaster is a toroidal disaster at its core. So it makes sense to approach it and correct it in a toroidal manner at that energetic level. My proposal is that we take one of these closed time-like loops, encapsulate Fukushima, and either, depending on which is the most effective, and we won't know until we do a couple of quick little experiments, but either bombard Fukushima with tens of thousands of years of time in a very short, effective lapsed period. In other words, make a closed time-like loop that is a colander or a sieve that allows more time than usual to flow into it. At the same now, one might think, okay, but this is going to bring it to the point of supercritical mass, etc. My thought, though, is that we take the vortex math that we create our toroids reversed and interlaced with multiple layers of skin. Personally, I think this would also be very effective as a Rodin coil, that instead of making one coil, you would, as soon as you got done with one coil, you would wind the reverse of it to increase the styling effect, or to increase the stacking effect within the styling, and do it at least three times, because, of course, we're dealing with that gap component. And so what I would do is I would create the gap in the middle and have these two interlacing Rodin coils, skins, one over the other, reversed. But just for the Rodin coil, because I think that the effect would be not, I think it would be magnifying, not canceling. And so you would get probably an order of magnitude with every layer of skin that you're layering on, because you're going to increase the styling effect that much. And if it's reversed, it'll, of course, couple, and you'll have your your doubling and your all of your mathematics transfer from one layer to the other. In any event, though, returning to Fukushima, it's my contention that the toroids that are generated that do the actual closed time-like loop constructions, those magnetic fields, are not in fact spherical as they may, as the creators may think they are, but are highly concentrated toroids, and that we can use the vortex math component to that to create a styling effect and thus magnify the time constraint capability. If I'm correct, it should be rather clear fairly instantly as soon as we're able to switch on the coil, because if I'm correct about this and we can apply this multiple magnetic layers reversed as skins over a toroid that we then use in our closed time-like loop to control what's going on, to basically act as a barrier to the transmission of the energetic pulse, then that is all of reality. If I'm correct about that, then we should see some almost instant perceivable effect within the light as it attempts to transit the gap between the multiple layers of the magnetic containment field. I think it should probably end up being highly reflective, in the sense that even though the light will jump across there very fast, and the photons will move much faster than light usually does, the effect to our eyes will be that the light will disappear. But because of the entrainment, the quantum entrainment level, it will actually reflect back a photon for every photon that transits, and so we'll see it as a big silvery kind of a bubble. It could go the other way. The math is indeterminate at this stage, and because I don't have one of these field generators to even do a small test on to see which way the polarity is involved, especially as it relates to the photons, I can't predict at this point whether it'll go become silvery or go hypertransparent, and that'll probably be black, a black that we're just not used to seeing. In any event, though, so what we'll do is to consider that we can take this closed time-like loop, generate it in such a way with its own source of energy that will be internal to the loop, so it will also be contained within the loop, and then contain that loop itself, that toroid, within another skin that acts as the barrier to the first skin and is reversed in its polarity. So in other words, say that we decide we're going to bombard Fukushima with 20,000 years of time over the course of the next 6 months. We will create a toroid that will do that, provide a gap between it and the next toroidal skin, and the next toroidal skin will be the opposite in polarity, and it will restrict the flow of time going into that area. And this will basically act as a barrier for all of us on this side of it to anything that occurs within that bubble during the process of those 20,000 years of time being rushed in. It's risky, but I don't think we have a whole lot of options other than to start taking risks, because the certainty of the current course of action is basically death for everybody that is above the equator in a relatively short period of time, you know, a couple of years, and the death of the rest of the planet over the course of the following few years, because bear in mind what's going to occur. If Fukushima were to kill a large portion of the population by direct radioactive poisoning of the 800 millibar jet stream level, which would rain down highly radioactive particles across the entire northern hemisphere, then our entire infrastructure starts decaying, including all the other nuclear plants up here. And we won't have the personnel, people will be getting sick, the hospital system would break down, blah, 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 blah. It's just, you know, your basic nightmare scenario. We needn't dwell on the details. Everybody can speculate well enough on their own and postulate and fill in all of the gaps. The point being, though, is that every nuke plant on the planet is dependent, basically, on the health of every other nuke plant on the planet, not getting to an extreme level of distress that it causes the body humanity to be unable to tend to these nuclear hotspots. And thus my rant here and my irritation over this weekend with the statement by Fulford that he's actually examined radioactivity levels in Tokyo. The reason that I find that it's incredible is simply because human nature does not normally work that way. Ben Fulford might be an exception, and if he is, then I will apologize to him. But he will have to provide proof to me that he is an exception to humanity. Because here's the situation. If I get a call from somebody, if someone said, okay, Cliff, you know, prove to me that you've been out here checking your radiation. Well, I'm going to cite to the model number, the everything I know about my nuclear Geiger counters here. I'm going to cite how I calibrate them. I'm going to tell you who I bought it from. And if I were to just pop off that kind of information about my local radiation, I'm going to be able to tell you that, oh yes, last month I found this number of disintegrations per minute or clicks per minute or on what scale I was reading it and so on. I cannot help myself from providing that level of detail. There was none in that. There was just these blanket statements. Blanket statements are a form of distancing in lying. So when you're spotting people that are attempting to spotting people that are lies that people are putting out, look for them to use words that will attempt to distance themselves personally and emotionally from the lie that they are telling. And so the first statement that Ben made in that response about the nuclear stuff had nothing at all to do with nuclear radiation. It was casting aspersions upon the personality of this Japanese minister, which maybe the fellow deserves it. That's not the point. The point is that it instantly distanced Ben from the response that he gave thereafter about having gone on out over in these other sites and with other people and checked them and so on. Now, see, if I had been doing that, I know it's terrible to judge the universe by my own approach, but I think most people would be volunteering a little bit more information about the readings they actually found. In fact, I would like to ask Ben, what is normal radiation for Tokyo? I know down to the clicks per minute what normal radiation is for my area because I've been checking it since 2003. And when it shifted from normal to not normal, I was very alarmed and I was very aware of that. It is inconceivable that areas around Tokyo that are being swept and determined to have very high radiation by people with Geiger counters that will give you the model numbers and show you on YouTube that they're actually out there doing it, that Ben Fulford somehow finds all these other spots that don't have anything other than normal. And he's not even defining what normal is. So I just question the statement. The reason I question it is because it's not like the financial crap, right? The financial stuff is all an abstraction. The nuclear radiation will kill us all. And we've had all kinds of stuff in our data about 1.289 billion people dying as a direct result of the Israeli mistake, and in a very short period of time. It's probably happening right now. As a corollary to that, there's all kinds of stuff in there about extinction-level events and doom for us all and the data gap, and all of that's showing up. So I'm just a little irritated that people are throwing up in my face that, oh yeah, there's no radiation in Tokyo, and I'm not worried about it. If he wants to say, I don't know about the radiation in Tokyo, and I'm not worried about it, that's fine. I don't care. But if he's going to make statements that other people are going to assume are true and factual, then please provide some support for that, because now is the time for facts, not opinions based on basically internal bullshit denial answers. Most people are not self-examining, and we as a species really need to get over that hurdle and start to become self-examining as we adapt to what's going on here. It's my contention that this crisis with the nuclear reactor is, and all of them, all of these nuclear reactors, is timed well by universe. At this particular point in our species journey, we've reached a threshold of numbers of us on the planet that many people are saying is overpopulation. And, oh, the horrors of overpopulation, and if you know the mantra of the powers that be, they want to cut us down, whittle us down to 500 million, et cetera, et cetera. However, look, here our species is motivated at its time of greatest planetary occupation. Insofar as we know, in the current time frame, we're at a level of population that's never before been seen on this planet, and yet what do? We invent the internet that presents to each and every one of us an increase in the tactile response or a tactile perception of density of population. In other words, the internet brings in and increases our feelings of population density. If you're living in a crowded metropolitan area or the wilds of Montana or are in Antarctica, you can have the same virtual experience of population density no matter where you are. It is now ubiquitous around the planet. So we are all feeling a level of population density that is based on the number of people that are actually on the internet. As more and more people gain wealth or survive long enough to get access to it and provide us with their thoughts on things, then we're going to increase that population density until theoretically, as was discussed in the ancient Vedic text under the title of Indra's Net, where every node saw every other node somehow magically in this string of pearls that surrounded the whole planet, we're going to get to the point where every single human can have an impact on every single other human and thus increase our ability to perceive the planetary population density in a way that's never before been felt. This is part of, probably, in my opinion, is probably part of an evolutionary process being foisted on us by universe. So since that's the case, I'm able to sort of sit here as an old fart who's dying off and who will not be part of that evolutionary process and see that it's actually affecting those individuals around us and is probably intergenerational. This evolutionary process is undoubtedly going to have, if we survive, huge impacts on what humans are able to do and our capabilities and so on, because it's going to cross us to a threshold that does not exist in nature, which is the tribal threshold. The tribal threshold is this 145-person memory bank, if you will, that's estimated to exist at a particular core within our mind-brain structure that allows us to function in a tribal level. And that as we leave these smaller groups and get into larger groups, we have to adjust our mindset. But basically, there are those people that can contend that in any given period in your life, you've got about 145 people or less that are around you in a significant fashion, and that you will find some level of comfort. That is to say, maybe you're a loner like myself and you only need to see 30 people in a year. You'll find some way of having those 30 people, human levels of interaction, meet your needs. But if you're more of an extrovert, then you'll shade up towards the 145 person limit. My point being, though, that the internet has brought us to this level where this next generation, the younger generations, are shedding that limit. But this is a biologically imposed limit in terms of how we are raised within the whole idea of it takes a village to raise a child kind of thing, right? So now we're going to be more than human, something that was non-tribal, because these kids are growing up in an environment in which they will feel population pressures that greatly exceed anything we older people could ever have imagined at that same level, in terms of the same age, in terms of our level of maturity. This is going to impose a great deal of change on our social order and our society and individuals, I believe, as we go forward. Universe seems to be mandating a lot of this. I mean, it's no coincidence, not a meaningless coincidence, in my way of thinking, that all this crap is occurring at the same point in history, and we have all the weird calendar stuff from the Mayans and everybody else to point to this particular point as this particular time as well. And then we get here and look what we're doing. We're heaping it all on ourselves to manifest this. In any event, our issues with Fukushima are not over. They're going to increase dramatically. Sometime back last year, I had had a interview in which I was discussing some of the data, and it showed that the particular set I was dealing with at the time was showing the basically an extinction-level event arising from Fukushima reaching a point of supercriticality. It was showing that within a summer time frame, we're within a couple of months of summer time frame here in 2012. I suspect that the next level of major crises is only months away. If we go on the 28-day basically lunar calendar that we use for our set theory stuff and for our model space, then we're actually looking for that particular data set at something occurring around the solstice, so that'd be the end of June, up to about the 15th of July. In the 25 or 30 day period there, I expect a lot more Fukushima related information. Now, the way that our understanding of what we do here at Half Past Human works It's my understanding we're going to get a large amount of verbiage hitting the mainstream media and going around the planet at that period of time that relates to the nuclear disasters awaiting us all. However, I think we could short-circuit what universe has in mind by generating events now that will cause us all to be discussing these things in that same time frame, as opposed to simply waiting around for universe to kick the reactor into supercriticality so that we'll have to discuss it. And so my thought is that we find out which part of the secret ops world they've got the time dilation fellows hidden, root them out there, grab a couple of their time dilating generators, monkey about with them in a lab for a few days to see what we can produce in the way of a countervalence with a gap between, and see if we can't snap one of these puppies around Fukushima. I'm quite convinced that it won't harm us in any way to do so, and it may actually save our ass. So, anybody who knows where any of these time guys are, tell them to listen to this. You know, if they take the idea and go and do it, that'd be great. I don't necessarily want to stir my butt and actually go over to Fukushima anyway, although I'd be quite happy to sit down with a lab somewhere and explain to people what my thinking is on the time theory stuff. I think I got a good insight on it, especially because I'm something of a synergist and I can take information from point A and point Z and put them together and come to a happy new greater than the sum of the parts conclusion. And that's basically where we're at here. There's a bunch of other things we can discuss. I still have, as a brief update, I still have not gotten enough short-term data through the immediacy data to be able to frame the archetypes and to get the model space to load. I've got Igor running the spiders again. I'm dumping the database because a lot of the immediacy data is now stale. And I'm going to take another tack with a different set of parameters set on the spiders to see if we can't force the accumulation in a deterministic fashion of short-term data. At this point, it's still undetermined as whether we are able to produce, and if we are able to produce, when we're able to produce another shape report or alter report. Still working on it, though, so a little disappointing. We're going to have to dump the database, and this puts us back at least a whole nother week just to get an initial load that I can then start looking at to see if we're going to pick up any of the shorter term that allow me to frame the archetypes. Still working at it in the midst of all the boat work and everything else. It may, again, be something universe just simply doesn't want to happen at this time, and that may be the case, and that may be part and parcel, and actually I'm quite sure that I really screwed up and I never should have called it a data gap. It's really more of a data flood, and the trying to deal with it as a gap put a certain framework in my mind that is not really accurate, and so I'm now having to really examine what we're dealing with in terms of the data flood to take other approaches. In any event, here we go. It's the 16th of April. Our next really large problem dates that came out of the last few runs center around the nuclear problems of this summer. I'm just sort of blithely skipping over all the rioting and the economic chaos yet to come because I really don't see it as meaningful against the background of intense radiation poisoning of the planet. And then we have all the other sun stuff, sun disease, and those kind of things to deal with. Not that we can really materially affect those. But I really do think we can save ourselves from the nuclear radiation issue if we start to really think outside of all the boxes that the powers that be have got out there to constrain our view of reality. Reality is very much mutable at a level of the energies. We just have to approach it from that point and stop throwing rocks at it. Talk to you guys later. Bye.